We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, friends. This episode of Big Blue Banter is brought to you by Prize Picks. Head on over to Prize Picks and use promo code BANTER and they'll match up to $100 on a new deposit. Thank you and enjoy.
Welcome back. It's the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Steiner, joined as always my co-host, Nick Bellotto. And one more warning. We'll get these warnings until we get through them, but I am away for this week. Do not have my proper microphone, my mixer, any of the equipment. So you are going to deal with some bad audio compared to Nick's. That's just how life goes. Eventually, it'll get through, and we'll get back to normal. But for now, just that's a fair warning. But we're doing mailbag again, mailbag part two, Nick. How you doing today, bud?
I'm doing well. Dan, I never thought I'd see you with or see anybody on the face of the planet in a Wisconsin, what is that, zip up with a Costa Rica hat. You go to Costa Rica for what, like 5 days, and now you bought a Costa Rica hat? What's the deal with this?
Yeah, well, I actually, right before I left for this trip, we were golfing down there for one of the days. And before I left, I literally put all my golf stuff to the side, which is a hat. I'm not a hat guy normally. You know this. I only wear a hat when I golf, really. But I put my hat, my golf shoes, the glove, the balls. Of course, like the flight comes, the day comes. It's like an early flight. I have to leave at like 6 a.m. And I'm like tired. And I forget in the corner of the room all the shit. So I had to buy everything down there, including a hat, because it's 93 and sunny. The crazy humidity every single day of Costa Rica. It's insanely hot in that country. So I had to buy a hat immediately because I knew it was golfing and we were going to have a boat day. I needed a hat for both of those two things. So bought a hat down there, and of course I'm going to buy a Costa Rica hat when I'm in Costa Rica. But you know what pissed me off about that, Nick? And this goes back to a previous podcast last year when I used to wear my New York Urban League, when I used to play in that basketball league, green shirt with the wings. Was that an Eagles shirt? You got an Eagles shirt with Eagles colors? Someone right away on the trip was like, I thought you were wearing an Eagles hat. And you brought that little hat. This is going to go over terribly on the podcast. I just like the teal color, but you know, it's not going to work out, I guess.
Yeah, no, I don't view that though. I think the Eagles shirt when you wore that on the podcast, I was like, Dan, come on.
Not an Eagles shirt. It was a New York Urban Basketball League.
It looked way too much like an Eagles shirt. This I don't view that hat as like an Eagles hat.
Just since that podcast has happened, I've like consciously not worn that shirt anytime we record. Like just that it's like, you know, back whiplash of like the fact of like, oh no, I don't want this to happen again.
I think there were like at least five people in the comments though who were like, Dan, what are you thinking, man? Like it wasn't like just a me thing. Like I think
it was an Eagles shirt though. Yeah. It's not an Eagle.
No, I know.
I know you know. I'm making sure they know. Okay. All right. Let's get back to the mailbag. Let's talk some Giants football. And we're going to start with a three-part question here from our boy Rob, who says, first of all, Nick Filato, your beard is looking great. Secondly, if we let Saquon walk, besides a competent O-line, would a competent RBBC that can block and receive a competent RBC that can block or receive would probably be the most likely and attainable solution to next year's run game. But when it comes to pure rushing ability,
what style would you prefer?
Yes. What style would you prefer your lead back? An interesting question. What style would you prefer your lead back in your backfield to have? Power, vision, shiftiness, home run hitter. Obviously, there are those who excel in both or all. But I want to know which one you would want the most. And in this scenario where we have both equal blocking, receiving, which would you prefer? Okay, I like that question.
I think I would prefer the shiftiness home run hitter because explosive plays are everything in the NFL. So if you're telling me that the Giants could have got someone like a Devon Achane and paired him with another running back who maybe was a little bit more like a Brandon Jacobs, for instance, just to go back into the vault to look at a Giants great from the past. I think that's what I would prefer. Now, with Achan specifically, I don't view Achan as like a 1A personally, just because he is like 190 pounds and he's injured often. But I think the skill set that he brings is so valuable when it's used correctly. And I think the Miami Dolphins rushing game uses him correctly when he is available and he is out there on the football field. So if I had to pick, like, who would you prefer my lead back to be? I'm going to go with the shiftiness home run hitter, but I want to pair him with a complement that is basically a 50-50 split with that power type of back and somebody who has really good vision, really good footwork, and just basically falls through tackles and gets 3, 4, 5 yards almost every carry.
Yeah, interesting question. I actually prefer, so for me, it's the two things. It's the vision, the processing, and contact balance. That's what I'm looking for at the running back position. I actually, the home run hitter is not my priority, Nick, for me personally. I just think home runs at the running back position are so rare at the NFL level. Like, you look at what Saquon did in 2018, we had 9 runs of 40 plus. At the time, it was only like Barry Sanders and Chris Johnson, CJ2K, who had anywhere near that level. I just think it's very rare in an NFL offense for a multitude of reasons. Like, it's just so hard for a running back to make those plays. Now, you could get the guy like Achan, who has like a crazy amount in 1 year, and there's going to be some guys in the right classes that hit the right system that fits them and have an offense that has like 2 outside receivers that command so much attention that the defense playing off where it can work. But like, for my ideal backfield, it's, you know, great blocking, and you know, I would prefer those. I actually always think there's value, Nick, in finding the running backs who run the low 40 times, because I always look at it like, how often are you going to need these guys to run 40 yards in an NFL game? They just don't get many opportunities for that. 20 yard dash would be interesting to me, or 15. So I'm always looking for vision, processing. Like, James Cook, to me, he's not the fastest runner, even though he did run like a pretty good 40, but he's not like the, you watch him and he's not like CJ2K or Barkley in his prime, but he uses the vision. Dalvin's an even better example, his brother. He uses his processing. Dalvin's a much better example. So he created a lot of 20 yard runs and 15 yard runs just by vision and just by those cutbacks and the processing. So I always feel like you even have a better chance sometimes having that. So that's my lean at that position.
I feel like I'm answering, I just want both. That's mainly what my thing is, and not in two separate backs, right? I want a guy who could fall through contact, and I want a guy who can hit a home run, and I want them to be used interchangeably depending on the situation and the context. I like the changeup. I like the fact that you can wear a defense down with the Brandon Jacobs and then throw a Devon Achane at them, and the next thing you know, their linebacker's like, oh, crap, get over there and tackle them outside the number. That sucks. You know, that's what I kind of want out of the rushing attack, if all things are equal, as Rob kind of laid out in this question. Rob also says, don't worry, Dan, your beard is also great. Nice. Also, yeah, nice. Also, when it comes to Twitter, do you guys scroll from where you're at on the page to the top to see your timeline in order, or do you constantly reload and press the home button to go directly to the top? Appreciate it, and I love the pod.
Great question. That's fun. That's a fun one. I'm curious to get your take on this, Nick. I always reload, so I miss a lot of tweets this way. I guess maybe I should maybe reconsider this process, but I do always reload. I just fire at the top and reload.
I'm a big reloader too. Reloader.
I don't know if that's a good thing, though. We probably miss a lot of good content that way, but yeah, what are you going to do? All right, Sam Rivera, what'd you say?
Sam, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Sam Rivera says, I wrote this to Dan in the offseason before they signed Daniel Jones and Saquon. Where do you think we are 1 year later if we didn't go this route? If Tyrod Taylor had started all year with a rookie back, for example, I still think we would possibly be at pick 6 and kind of the same spot. We'd just be minus the Daniel Jones contract. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, so this is actually what Samuel wrote, and this is what he's alluding to. It's a post below. It says, at Dan Schneier NFL, that's you, Dan. Thoughts on the
2023. Good job, Nick.
Yeah. Well, he actually put this. Yeah. I would love to take credit, but this is him. Thoughts on the immense progress Dable and Kafka had with DJ by maximizing skill set in year one? Could this be an argument for letting him walk and drafting a guy with traits that they can maximize in the same way just on the rookie deal? Use the money to strengthen the team elsewhere, as well as DJ has played. I still am not blown away with watching him. Still some intangibles missing that I can't quite pinpoint. Not a hater, just wondering if letting DJ and Saquon walk might be the best long term.
Yeah, Sam, listen, bud, if you have any thoughts on the next lottery drawing, if you know what's going to be the next big stock, what I should buy. Give me an ETF if you, you know, give me what's the Bitcoin. Give me the, well, not Bitcoin. What's the word for it? The next, not Bitcoin. Like, what's the next Bitcoin going to be, right? The next, what are those? Why am I blanking? I'm like, oh, crypto. Give me the next hit big crypto. Let me know, because you seem to have nailed this one. And it's funny, I would have never thought you were a hater. So many people would have probably called you a hater with that. And that shows how stupid people are when they say you're a hater. And like how last year, anyone who said anything bad about Daniel Jones was just an asshole to them. Like, you're just such a hater. Like, was that definitely the case? It doesn't seem to be now. So where are we at now? We're only 1 year later. And that person who was called a hater is not, you're probably not even, you yourself probably aren't even thinking they're a hater anymore. Even you yourself probably have your doubts about where we're at with Daniel Jones at this point. But it was a good question to begin with, obviously. And, you know, look, hindsight is 2020 for Nick and I. You obviously were ahead of this. I think even Nick and I, if you really think, listen back to those podcasts and know us well enough, knew that we were never really fully sold on Jones. We were hopeful that things were turning around in the right direction and that, but we still always said, like, what we saw in 2022 can't be the ceiling. That has to be like the bottom of this. This has to be like, it's a new Daniel Jones. Dable figured him out. Now he only gets better from this point on. It was never like, that's going to be it. And that's the ceiling. And we're good with
look,
this.
Look, we don't need to harp on this because we brought it up a lot. But our main thing after the 2022 season, we were saying was, guys, the Giants were still dead last in explosive plays. Yeah. That's a huge freaking issue. That was like, our podcast was really driving that point home. And we said it a lot. You can go back and listen.
Yeah, and we knew that, and you guys know, and we know that there was no ceiling with that 2022 offense. It was supposed to be the ground floor. It can't be the baseline, and it can't be the ceiling. It can only be the floor. To be honest with you, for any kind of long, it can be fine. That's your, if you're okay, just like getting to the playoffs every year and never doing anything. Well, actually, that's not even the case, by the way. That wasn't even the lock, you know, blueprint for getting to the playoffs every year. That was kind of the ceiling of that blueprint. So we always knew it needed to evolve. Now, to answer the question that was asked this time, Nick, where would they be at if they had let Jones walk and Barkley walk? I think based on the offensive line situation from 2023 and the injuries there, they would have still been in the same spot, though I think they could have possibly drafted even higher without Barkley there to help them win some of those games, Nick. Now, I personally believe, and you can disagree, I'm not going to get into the whys now, that Tyrod Taylor gives the Giants a better chance to win than Daniel Jones. That's just my viewpoint, or at least the same exact chance, but probably better. If he had an actual chance to start in 2022, I think we would have seen that. And then I think last year he was clearly better than Jones on tape, though he had, you know, Jones had worse circumstances. He played a harder schedule than Taylor, and the O-line was much worse than when Taylor had it. That's true. But just watching him operate that offense, it's a more explosive version of the offense by light years. And I just think he's a much better processor than Jones. Though Jones, again, I think they're probably on par. So I think given the fact that you wouldn't have Barkley, they actually would have lost more games, the Giants. So I would say they might have actually been in a better position because they would have a chance at May or Caleb or Jaden right now. So yeah. It's hard to not. And obviously they wouldn't have the Jones contract. So just that alone would put them in a better spot.
And Samuel and Dan, dude, I know, Dan, I know you understand this. And if we got to be realistic with this situation, I don't know how Joe Shane and Brian Daboll weren't going to bring back Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones after they won a playoff game. Like the giant nation, giant fans, everyone would have killed them for that. And you should never make calls based on outside voices or outside pressure or anything like that. And I fully understand that. Those things do matter, and you can talk yourself. And I think Joe Shane, they all talk themselves into the development that, because Daniel Jones did develop a lot from 2021 to 2022. It's just all of the things that he didn't show in 2022. He also didn't show in 2023, because I don't think he can actually really do that at a consistent level in the NFL. But man, like, go back to that time. What would have happened if they were just like, you know what? Yeah, we just won a playoff game. First playoff game since the last time we won the Super Bowl. All right, Daniel Jones, you can walk. And Saquon, hey, go fuck yourself too. Like that would have went over so poorly, dude.
Would have went over a lot of fans poorly. A lot of fans would have been mad. It would have looked like you're not even trying to build on the progress you had. Like you're not. It would have, people would have said, are they trying to win football games? Are they actually trying to win football games? And that's how hard it is in the NFL, by the way, to do the full rebuild. Like you'll rarely see teams do it because of this extenuating factor. And you know what makes that even harder? The another extenuating outside factor that makes it even harder? An owner who loves the quarterback. And the owner we have, John Mara, loves Daniel Jones and truly believes in him full wholeheartedly. So that makes the decision even tougher to do. You come to him and you say, because you have to tell John in that spot, like, listen, man, I know it was great last year and to an extent. I know we won that one playoff game. It's been so long. Jones looked better. He did improve. But you know what? We don't really believe in him long term. He would have been like, what the hell do you mean? That's BS. You want to start over now? And I don't know if that would have worked. And he would, and because John would have said, like, these fans are not going to handle this. Because I'll tell you this, Nick, like, a lot of fans have come around now to Jones not being the answer because there's just so much of a sample size of it. But before this past year, after what happened in 2022, the majority, it's taken a while to get a lot of fans to that point. Like, just the fact that it's taken so long to get even most of the, a good amount of this fan base to that point shows how much they wanted it to work and how many people want, you know, weren't going to be okay with the Giants just saying, go ahead, Jones, walk in free agency. And that's it. Barkley, you're done here too. And we're going to go to the full rebuild.
And honestly, I think it was the Tommy DeVito 3-game winning streak that really pushed people like over the edge.
A lot of
like big people on Twitter whose like whole like Twitter thing was, oh, Daniel Jones is the best. They kind of like started being like, well, maybe he's not that great after an undrafted rookie. Brian Daboll had an undrafted rookie win 3 games.
True.
Guy who was living at his mom's house, go in and win 3 football
games. No reps with the first team guys.
No reps from the first team. And he's throwing deep sail concepts and he's hitting guys from the pocket outside and the stuff that we just did not see. With Daniel Jones in there, okay? Right. And I think that's what really kind of, like, drove the nail in the Daniel Jones coffin for a lot of the people who are really just hanging on to it.
Yeah, and it took that point. But the point being, like, they weren't there last offseason. They weren't going to be there last offseason.
No, of course.
It was a tough sell for Joe Shane. And, like, anytime you're a GM and you're coming off your first year and a head coach and you have a great first year and you won coach of the year and you were in, probably in the mix for GM of the year and you're like, now we want to fully rebuild, like, that just doesn't happen. Realistically, it may be the best thing long term. A lot of you guys, I know Sal, a lot of people were pushing for it, and I get it. I'm giving you guys credit for seeing it and having a good vision on it, but I'm still going to say every time it comes up, because this might happen again in our fanhood, Nick. We're the Giants franchise. We haven't been that great. We may have to deal with this again and again. But, you know, we're probably not going to be there that time too, and they're not going to be there either, because it's just rare to see an NFL team just after a playoff season say, we're fully rebuilding because we don't see a long-term vision with this group. It's just, it just don't see it a lot, simply put.
At Dumbliners asks 2 questions. He asks, if the Giants draft the quarterback, do you think he becomes the starter, or do you think they stick with DJ? Also, in general, do you have any opinions or rookie quarterbacks starting versus sitting for a year? I think a lot of that is contextual personally. And in terms of regarding your first question, do you think he becomes the starter? I think Daniel Jones, if he's healthy, will be the starter week 1 for the New York Giants. Now, if they draft Caleb Williams or Drake May, maybe that's not the case, and then there's going to be this awkward one-year situation. I still think even then they'll probably do the whole, like, yeah, Daniel Jones, our starter, yippee-skippy-doo, and then by week 3, it's going to be the rookie quarterback that they drafted. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. I always would like rookies to sit if they're not ready, but if they are ready, if they can come in and be like a C.J. Stroud, then, yeah, get him out there and get him and use your freaking rookie quarterback. There's no reason to have him sit. It just doesn't seem like a lot of quarterbacks come into the league and are C.J. Stroud. A lot of quarterbacks come into the league and they really freaking struggle for the first while, and some of them they never actually grow from it. So I think that's more of the norm than the C.J. Stroud prototypes.
It's a good question, and I like your answer, Nick, and I like this question a lot. I'm going to pick – get into both, Joe, because I do think they're both good. So if they draft a quarterback, do you think he becomes a star? So it depends where they draft the quarterback first, I would say. If they draft a quarterback at 6, do I think he becomes a starter? If they draft a quarterback after trading up 3 or 1, see, that changes a lot. If they trade up for a quarterback, I think he becomes a starter faster. If they sit at 6, he becomes a starter, but a little slower than if they had traded up for 1 or 3. If they draft a 2nd or 3rd round guy, I think he would only become the starter if Jones is losing a lot of games in the regular season, the Giants are out of it, and then they turn to him for that reason. So those are the 3 factors there for me. Do they trade up for him? Then if they trade up for a guy, I think he could become the starter very early in the season, even possibly week 1. If they sit at 6, it's the same thing for me. I think he'd become the starter very early in the season, even possibly week 1, though not as fast if they had traded up if they sit at 6. Now, a lot of this will depend on what I'm going to say in my second question, where, and then the final thing is if they take 1 in round 2, 3, or 4, I just think he'll only play if Jones struggles and the Giants are losing games and the end of the season is here early, you know, in midseason, like it's been for the Giants most of the last 10 years. But to answer your second question, I'm actually strongly on the side of he should be starting right away, the rookie quarterback. If, and here comes the big if, and this goes into the first part of the question too, if the O-line is not a disaster, If the O-line is a disaster, I'm out on this. And the quarterback also has to be a quick processing guy. He's not going to be some guy who learns the offense slowly but has all the other tools. He has to be like Stroud, where you can get anticipatory throws early. The ball's out. Because Houston O-line wasn't good last year, but it also wasn't a disaster. It has to be at least that level of, like, not total disaster. Because why I'm for starting in rookie year one, because A, I want to maximize the rookie contract for as long as I can. B, if he's good enough, and you kind of touched on this a little bit in your answer, Nick, if he's good enough, he can start right away, like we saw with Stroud. And if he's not good enough and he sucks right away, is he even going to get there at any point? A lot of the good teams these days are saying no, and they're moving on faster from these quarterbacks because they don't think he's going to get there. So I almost want to throw him right in as, again, as long as the O-line is not like what it was in 2023, can't be that. Or at times the end of Eli Manning's career. I think of the Eric Flowers, Bobby Hart year, whenever that was. Those are your two starting tackles. Like, everybody loves to pile on, like, your Giants 2023 line was the most historically bad thing I've ever seen in my life. And it's like, you remember the Eric Flowers, Bobby Hart line? Because I do. I remember watching that Dallas Cowboys game where they just weren't picking up a single stunt for somehow for four quarters. You can't teach these guys to do it. So I think my answer is the start early. I don't love the sit for a year. And I know there's examples recently, Nick, of sitting for a year working. But, like, is it definitely because those guys sat for a year? Like, one of those examples is Patrick Mahomes, dude. Like, we're talking about, like, going to be probably the greatest quarterback of all time. Like, I don't know if it would have mattered when he played. It's the best of all time.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's going on, Big Blue Banter listeners? I'm excited for the football season for several reasons. And one of those reasons is Prize Picks, which is North America's largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform. And it's so simple to use. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including professionals, sharks, and people who are going to exploit you, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and you just watch the winnings roll in. It's very simple to play and gives you a little extra skin. I've set my picks in less than 60 seconds. There are so many stats to choose from, and the withdrawals of funds are easy and quick. Dan and I will be adding a segment to our show before every game where we pick our favorite stats, more or less yards or touchdowns, what have you, and we'll be discussing why from a scheme, matchup, and game theory perspective. I love their promotions and how easy their interface is to operate at Prize Picks. I may select more on tackles for a loss from Bobby Okereke or Kayvon Thibodeau next game. They also do other sports as well. It's a really cool experience. Please join Dan and I in the fun of Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. You will not regret it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, my friends, you know what time it is. You're hungry, you're starving, and you desperately need pizza. You should get the best pizza on the market. And that is, of course, Little Caesars. Make Little Caesars, the official pizza sponsor of the NFL, part of your game day. Order online during the pizza pregame all day on NFL game days and even on Pro Bowl Sunday. And get ready for some football fun and cheesy, delicious pizza. Choose your favorite Little Caesars pizza or pick the toppings you crave. Either way, you win. And speaking of winning, everyone scores with convenient delivery or our in-store pizza portal pickup. So grab some friends and enjoy a few slices during the game.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Dumbliners, at Dumbliners, also named Joe, also asks, after watching this postseason, do you think Shane can put together a competitive team? Feel like a lot of his moves are conservative with low risk. Can he be, should he be more aggressive?
That's an interesting question.
A lot of this is due to the team that Joe Shane inherited. I think a lot of it is also due to what happened in the first year of the team that he did inherit. Look, I think that the first year, the plan was, look, we're probably going to suck a little bit. We're going to see, and then we'll reevaluate. Daniel Jones is going to be gone. We're going to look for our quarterback. Well, that didn't happen. They ended up winning a playoff game, and then they extended Daniel Jones, and now I think they're living in that mistake. And yeah, you can blame Joe Shane for that, but I don't think this was the original plan. And I think a lot of the moves he's making now seem to be conservative and low risk is because he's tepid about going all in again, but he did already go all in too. So those weren't necessarily conservative, low risk. I mean, I know the contract that he gave Daniel Jones, you could say was conservative because he built in and out, but that's also just smart. And that's a prudent thing to do with a quarterback that you don't fully believe. So right now, I just think they're stuck in a position where they were led to believe that they were going to be better than they actually were because the success that they experienced in year one. And now they're like, crap, we actually do kind of suck. And now we need to get away from all of the moves that we made to enhance our team when it wasn't necessarily ready to be enhanced. And now I think we really just need to rip this freaking Band-Aid off. Because I don't view Joe Shane personally as somebody who is conservative or low risk. I think a lot of this is due to the quarterback situation that he has and him buying into the quarterback situation and now maybe being like, oh yeah, we love Daniel Jones. But in the back of his head, he's like, oh God, man, like we need to figure out this position and we're really now have kind of our backs against the wall. That's what I think. Dan, did that make any sense?
It made sense. The reason why it made sense to me is because I think this is such a complicated question for a lot of reasons. By the way, amazing question, Joe. These are back.
Great question. Yeah.
In my opinion. But it's I'll tell you why I think it's a complicated question. Because I look at the moves he's made. I think some have had some aggressiveness. I think he's made a lot of trades. He's done interesting things in the draft from a trade standpoint. He made a trade for Darren Waller that I think is partly conservative, low risk, like you can say, but it's also aggressive to an extent. Like you're going out for a guy who has the talent to be a difference maker in your offense if he can stay healthy. A lot of teams are souring on him because of the injury history, and you know that his contract's already in place, so you don't really have to pay him a crazy amount. Plus, you're taking what I think is aggressive. Maybe you can use the term not aggressive, but like savvy might be the word instead of aggressive. That the fact that, oh, he's a tight end, so he doesn't even have to pay that much against the cap because tight ends are so underpaid compared to receivers. And he's basically operating, assuming he was going to be healthy and a difference maker as a wide receiver. So I find those moves to be maybe more savvy than aggressive. So maybe the better word is savvy. He's taken some conservatism with some of his moves, right? Like he signs Daniel Jones, but only half of the contract is guaranteed. Those types of things. You know, he tags Saquon Barkley, which I would could say is you could say it's conservative. To me, it's like savvy because it's aggressive and overly aggressive. Like the thing with aggression is you can be aggressive as aggressive as you want, but it doesn't make it right just because it's aggressive. Like that's not that's aggressive doesn't equal wins. It can sometimes, but it doesn't always. So I'll be interested to see how he gets his quarterback. Like that's the one area that I would like him to be aggressive in. And I'm okay with him being aggressive in. The rest of them, I'd rather him be savvy than aggressive. And I do feel like he's been savvy in a lot of instances. So that would be my way to answer the question, Joe.
I think that's a really good way to put it. I think it has been a much more savvy than necessarily conservative, because they did go all in to win this season, but it wasn't necessarily like we're going to just absolutely screw ourselves in the future, because he did build in those. And that's what you would expect him to do for a quarterback that you're just, you know, less than a year ago, you didn't want to pick up his fifth year option. Like they didn't pick up the guy's fifth year option. The guy was able to convince them in a year, like, okay, maybe he's worth a shot. And now we see where we're at right now. T Mills 547230 asks, "Hey Nick, why does Bo Nix seem to be the forgotten quarterback of this draft? What am I missing?" And I'm going to group you into this, Dan, because I haven't necessarily watched Bo Nix, but I'll answer this question anyways. I think Bo Nix has been in college since I've been in college, it seems like. I think Bo Nix is a much older prospect who went down the Senior Bowl, and he didn't demand respect at the Senior Bowl. He didn't have a terrible event, but he wasn't great down there at the Senior Bowl either. And I think a lot of college football fans, people pay attention to college football, are just like, yeah, this guy's been around forever. Okay, like, he is who he is, whatever. Like, he's not that exciting. And I think that's why a lot of people are kind of just like, yeah, Bo Nix, whatever. He'll be like maybe he'll squeeze into the end of the first round. But regarding his traits, I don't necessarily have too much to opine on that right now. But I'm sorry, Dan.
No, I want to let you finish. I thought you were pausing there, or stopping, I should say. So I would say you answered this question best, Nick. The number one reason he's the forgotten quarterback of the draft, because he's been around for so long. That's number one reason. I could say other reasons as to why people might be skeptical of him, myself included. A lot of his production to me seemed like schematic based screen passes, quick hitting first read stuff. And that's not just based on what I've seen on tape. And I haven't seen Nix as the quarterback of this group that I've seen the least of by far so far, Nick. He's going to be last on my list personally. But just looking at the actual numbers, the actual general, like, hard, cold facts production, he has more screen production than most of these quarterbacks and more of these quick first read production than most of these quarterbacks. Now, with that said, as far – and then it goes into the third thing you said, Nick, which I think is good. A good point. He didn't really have the greatest Senior Bowl. I think most people thought he had a poor Senior Bowl. Some of the passes I saw just from people who were tweeting stuff out were not looking good. Now, one thing from the little I have seen of Nick, I do think he actually has more arm talent than people give him credit for. I don't think it's necessarily always utilized in that offense at Oregon, because I think so much of that is schemed up production, which hurts the overall value. Because when people point to Nick, it's like, here are these amazing stats he has. Look at this completion rate. Look at this tight end TD. But it's like, yeah, but so much of that is schemed up. Like, this is why I hate stats at the quarterback position in college, because I think it's so meaningless. I think all this is traits-based. I think if you're going to work in the NFL, it's basically just all traits-based at this point, because so much production and stats in college are just fugazi shit compared to the NFL. Like, it's a part that frustrates me a lot, and it makes this hard. But when I watch some of Nick's, and I've seen the least of him, Nick, I feel like he's got better arm talent than people realize. Like, some of the throws I see him making, specifically when he's on the move, these three-quarter throws he makes are like, damn, he changed his arm slot, he changed his trajectory, and he got the football outside in a good spot there. So I think he's got a little bit better arm talent than people realize. And so I understand why people like him from that perspective. But if you point to, like, the stats as your reason for liking Nix, that's when it starts to struggle for me, because so much of that was schemed up production.
And he also had – and I don't have the stats in front of me, but – at Auburn, his stats were very modest, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he had pretty modest stats. Now, he was still, like, you know, a rushing dude who ran people over. And I love the fact that he's, like, a big, strong, physical guy, right? But then when he gets to Oregon, it's, like, just absolutely blow up from a passing perspective. And if I'm not, I think he had, like, 45 touchdowns this year, and he, like, hardly threw any interceptions. So the stats really jump out. I need to dive into the nitty-gritty as to how all of that manifested. I know Oregon's offense, just generally speaking, is very horizontally based. It's, I'm going to spread you out. I'm going to hit you with a bubble screen. I'm going to hit you with a tunnel screen. I'm going to hit you with this screen. Oh, wait. RPO. Here we go. Okay, I'm going to run. Okay, now I'm going to hit the glance route. Excuse me. So it's a lot of that type of stuff that's not necessarily always replicable in the NFL.
And but, by the way, Nick, just to, I'm sorry.
Nah, you're okay. I'm sitting over here coughing my lungs out.
Oh, hopefully you're okay. I want to add to the point.
I was sick while I was in Fredericksburg, to be honest. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, that's not fun. But I want to add to the point you just made. The reason why it's not easily replicable. Wow. It's been a long day. It's been a long weekend. The reason why it's not easily replicable is because the game, and this we've talked about before, the college game is so different. They're utilizing the difference in the hash marks and the space they have on the field to run that style of offense. And you get to the NFL and that's gone. And so it's like, Don't talk. If you like Knicks, and I'm okay with you liking Knicks, talk to me about his traits and how they translate to NFL. If you bring up stats to me, I'm just going to be like, this to me personally is meaningless, because his stats in a game that's so different from a rules and standpoint, from a schematic standpoint at the college level, especially with the way Oregon ran the offense, I think you did a great job breaking that down, Nick, are very meaningless to me. I don't think they can translate at all in the NFL, stats specifically. So especially like the completion rate, like that to me is the dumbest one when you look at what he, like when you look
exactly.
at
exactly, which also doesn't mean that he's shit either. Like that's Yeah, because I remember, man, a lot of people that I respect in this industry, they hated Justin Herbert coming out of Oregon. They like mocked him to the point where I was like, look, I'm not going to study Justin Herbert's tape because the Giants just drafted Daniel Jones. So I don't think they're going to go and they're going to draft. That's just not the way the Giants operate. They're not going to do what the Cardinals ended up doing with Kyler Murray, right? But I was like, I've watched Pac-12 football and I was like, I kind of like this kid. Like he has a huge arm. And I remember down the stretch, he was a great athlete and he actually leveraged his athletic ability and ran a lot like down the stretch in like the Pac-12 championship and all that kind of stuff. So like I didn't necessarily understand why so many people hated him, and that was a huge mistake. And now all those people have a ton of egg on their face because they just absolutely hated Justin Herbert's tape. And I think a lot of that was because Oregon's offense it's hard to study because it's the way it is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you did a good job of breaking that down. And I think when it came to Herbert, what happened in the NFL, you're projecting the traits. The people who projected the traits instead of the stats and the production at that Oregon offense got a big win. The Chargers got a nice win there. They didn't have to trade up for Herbert. Like if you redid the draft and there was Justin Herbert in this draft and we knew what we knew now, and do you think Justin Herbert would just be sitting on the board for the Giants at sixth overall, Nick?
No.
No shot. A talent who's 6'5" with that kind of arm talent and that processing power in his brain. I know he hasn't put it all together. I still think there's room to grow for Herbert as a quarterback. But with that processing, that arm talent and that size and that athleticism, that's never lasting the sixth overall again. And maybe it will. And maybe we'll see another example of that with Drake May. People will overthink it and they'll look at the bad tape just like they did with Herbert and the off and the stats and all this stuff. And we'll overthink it and no one will trade up for him. I'm hoping that happens, Nick. It's my best possible route for this offseason. Just talk about the first mailbag. Overthink Drake May. Let him fall to six and have Shane not be overthinking that, please. And I'm not saying hurt, by the way. May is a guaranteed lock to work. That's the stupidest thing. Just as Daniel Jeremiah said, there are no perfect prospects. No quarterback's a lock to work. Luck was the closest thing I've seen, and it worked, but he could have not worked too. That's the point. If every quarterback prospect was a lock to work or worked, every team in the NFL by now would have a great quarterback, or at least like 60, 70% of the teams would have a great quarterback. You look at the numbers of actual great quarterbacks and just know that not the draft is a crapshoot. It doesn't mean don't take one. It doesn't mean you're not getting a great pick if you take one. That's the whole thing. Like you have to understand, like this is a gambling game. This is a dart throw, but it doesn't mean don't throw the darts, because otherwise you're never going to hit bullseye if you don't try to hit bullseye. But let's get to a couple more here, Nick, on this one. Then we'll get to the rest on a future one. But I like this one a lot, so I want to get this one in from Canes 1029. He's a Giants and Mets fan, which is near and dear to my heart, Canes, because that, or C James, I should say, not Canes, C James 1029, because I'm also a Giants and Mets fan. So he says, what do you guys see in the tape of Wandale Robinson and Jalin Hyatt? What's the upside of each of those young receivers? Do you see any warts in their respective games that might stop them from developing? Good question.
So I am so glad that CeeDee Lamb went on whatever podcast he went on week and started singing the praises of Wandale Robinson, because I think Wandale Robinson is a very underrated wide receiver. And we've been talking about that now, specifically this season, and how his skill set and his, not just like his burst, but his overall route running and body control post catch and while he is running routes in the pre-catch phase of the game is something that I think can be leveraged so much more than the Giants offense has necessarily done right now. I think he is and can be a threat down the field more than maybe we have seen right now. I think he is a dangerous operator around the line of scrimmage as well. So with Wandale Robinson, there's always going to be limitations because he isn't the biggest and because he's like the zero percentile for size, like in almost every size metric other than I think his weight. So he's small, but that doesn't mean he's necessarily bad. And I think he has a lot more upside than, let's say, other small receivers in the NFL, like a Rondale Moore, for instance.
Yeah.
So I think he has a very high ceiling, Wandale Robinson, and we haven't even come close to seeing how good he actually is. But he's never going to be the guy who is going to be catching away from his frame, because that's just not necessarily who he is. He's a very limited catch radius, and that sucks. So that would be his war. But I still think he's a very dangerous weapon that the Giants need to do a better job utilizing and leveraging. as for Jalin Hyatt. Jalin Hyatt right now has so many positive things going for him because of his vertical ability, his ability to stretch defenses vertically and horizontally, because that is going to scare the shit out of defenses. And that's very important. And I think Jalin Hyatt deceptively is very good at extending away from his frame and plucking the football and operating around the sideline. I think we saw probably too many drops in his rookie season. I think he was only like calculated for four. I want to say he had more than that though. Just like watching the tape, I think he dropped more passes than that. I don't necessarily think that's an indictment on his game though either. I think he can concentrate. I've seen him make very difficult catches with his hands away from his frame, take huge hits. What was that? The Bills game, or I think it was maybe where it was a fourth down and he caught the ball over the middle on a dig and he got absolutely obliterated, held on to the football. This is a rookie. I think there is work still with the route running. Now, I know it was raw coming out of Tennessee. That was one of the big knocks. I can't remember the game, and I brought this up on a previous podcast. Can't remember the game, Dan, but there was a game where he was running a route, and you could see it on the all 22 that he didn't run it at the proper depth, and he didn't do what he should have. And I remember when he was coming off the field while watching the game, Brian Daboll was yelling at him and getting in his ass. So I think there's still a little bit of that's not a wart to me though. That's something that can be adjusted and can be refined and can certainly be smoothed out with experience. So in terms of Jalin Hyatt, I don't necessarily see a glaring wart. I just think it's experience, and we'll see how he develops from there. He might not be the most physical receiver. That's something that I think neither of these guys necessarily have going for them. But I personally remain pretty high on both of these guys. I don't know if they're going to be 1As for whatever that means, but I think they could be very good assets for an offense and somebody, both of them, that basically 31 other NFL teams would want on their roster.
Yeah, it was an amazing answer. Nick ended up hitting almost everything I wanted to hit on both of these guys, so I'll just try to be brief with this and do more of a summation. Wandale, to me, has a considerably higher ceiling than Jalin Hyatt from what I've seen on tape. And I'll tell you why. I think Wandale, the only things working against him are that catch radius and maybe the contested catch ability. But I've seen that not be an issue for receivers that have been wide receiver ones and great level receivers in the NFL, like an Antonio Brown, you know, players of that mold.
Oh, now, man, Antonio Brown was so good.
Yeah, he's not quite at that exact. Like, that's like the ceiling of that. Like, he's never going to get to that level. But to me, his warts are less of a drawback from a overall ceiling standpoint than Jalin Hyatt's warts. And I'll explain why. I'll just get into it. So for me, Wandale Robinson, he's just so good getting in and out of his breaks. And that ability just gives you such a high ceiling to me. Also, I think he's not a big receiver, but he's a physical receiver. I think we saw that on a lot of those plays where he caught the ball, transitioned upfield towards the first down marker, took a big hit, and still got there anyway. And obviously, he has that running back background, which we saw a little bit of this year, which gives you more of a physicality to your game. So to me, like, his warts, you know, the catch radius, the hands, the ability to make those contested catches are warts. But if you can kind of get around that, so I see a bigger ceiling just based on his ability to get in and out of his breaks. And I know CeeDee Lamb sees that as well. Hyatt, for me, has, and I still love a player like Hyatt on the roster, but I just see less of a ceiling. I think Hyatt's ceiling for me is when you have a really explosive throwing quarterback and an explosive offense that spreads the field out, he can be your big play guy. He could also, in addition to being your big play guy that changes a game with one play, can also be the guy that, like you said, extends away from his frame around the sideline on an out route and allows you to utilize all areas of the field, throwing, you know, to outside the numbers, 10 to 15 to 20 yards down the field. He'll extend away from his frame and he'll make a catch. He also showed some better ability than I thought, Nick, last year at Yak. You know, that one play he caught where he caught that little drag route over the middle and stopped his foot in the ground and created extra space to get that. Mm-hmm. That's Yak right there. But the issues I have with Hyatt that have me thinking maybe the ceiling isn't the same as a Wandale Robinson type are two things. It's one, the route running. Like, he has to have a much more diverse route tree going into year two. Like, I'm okay with that being what it was in year one, but it has to pick up fast. And then two, the play strength. This was one of my issues, what I saw on tape at Tennessee, and I still thought it was a big issue for him last year. Now, Robinson is not even big. He's a smaller receiver than Hyatt, but I think his play strength is much better than Jalin Hyatt's from what I've seen on tape. So I need Hyatt to get to that level. And that could just be, you know, getting in the weight room, changing your body, because he has a frame that he can grow into. You talked about this a lot pre-draft and then once we drafted him. And I think you were right about that, Nick, but it obviously has to show up more on tape. So that would be my take on those two.
I'm wondering, Wandale Robinson, I just looked up right now. He's 178 pounds. And I want to look up Jalin Hyatt's official weight from the combine. I think it's 176, and which is like the fifth percentile. So Wandale Robinson is still, he weighs more than Jalin.
He's 4 inches shorter or more.
I think more. I think Wando Robinson's listed at 5'8". I wouldn't be surprised if that's more like towards like 5'7". And then Jalen Hyatt's, I want to say 6'1". Or 6'1". So you're talking about a big difference there. And if you look at what Wandale has, that Kyler Murray thing going on where like his legs are really thick. Like he's thick, mm-hmm. you know, two C's. You know what I'm saying? So like he's got that going on. So but just to circle back to the question, put a bow on it. I'm happy that the Giants have both of these guys. I really am.
Yeah. Matt. We'll do one more, Nick, and then we'll do the next part. Yep.
Matt DeBoy asks, would Brock Bowers be too much of a luxury pick if they want a pass catcher at 6 with Marvin off the board? Also, for Buffalo Wings, flats or drums? We'll tackle that second question first. For me, I do think it would be a little bit too much of a luxury pick, and I've liked everything I've seen from Brock Bowers, but me personally, I think that would be too much of a luxury pick. There's just, this draft is so stacked. Like I'm going through this draft right now, Dan, and there are players that I'm like I think these guys are better than guys in so many of the other draft classes that I've studied, and I think they're going to go with like pick 20.
Yeah, which is great, by the way.
It is. It is great. Yeah, I kind of, but at the same time, it's like, man, I wish they had another first round pick like they did in 2021.
Well, maybe if that's the case, Nick, and we'll see what happens if you still feel that way after you evaluate it more. And also if you feel that way versus the top blue chips and how you stack those guys first, like, but if you feel that way and it remains that way, Nick, it might be, your blueprint might end up be your favorite blueprint might end up being trading back, honestly, and, you know, picking up a future first rounder or another second rounder in addition to that and getting into that 15 to 20 range from 6 instead and getting one of those guys while also building toward the future with picks. That may end up being something you feel ideal. And it may even something I end up feeling ideal as we go through this. We'll see what happens.
That's why I love this process though, right? Right now people are asking us and I'm totally cool with people asking us, but like, I have no idea. I could change tomorrow my thought mm-hmm. process on this because there's so much information that I'm still naive to. There's so much information that I'm still unaware of this whole process. Yeah, it's February, you know? We haven't even had the combine yet. And that's just right around the corner, which is exciting enough.
I'm excited for that too. To answer your question, Matt, would Brock be too much of a luxury pick? It depends on their evaluation of him. I haven't seen a lot of Brock Bowers yet, so I don't have my evaluation of him. But if the Giants' evaluation of him is that he's going to be a game-changing, difference-making tight end at the NFL level. And I have seen some clips of him blocking, and I've been very impressed with it. I didn't know he was that good of a blocker, Nick. I thought he was just like a pass-only type of guy, like a next-level Kyle Pitts type of thing. But like he's had some good moments in the run game that I've been like, damn, this dude can actually block too. So if they feel like they can be that two-way tight end, that rare breed, like Hall of Fame type tight end, I'm definitely more open to it than a Hall of Fame linebacker, inside linebacker, or no, I actually like Hall of Fame inside linebacker, but like a Hall of Fame running back, for example, that's the one. Like I view tight end differently than running back. I view running back in its own breed of just, you don't touch that in round one with an early pick. So it's like I'm a little more open to it. I know people are not at that level though, Nick. I know a lot of people and they have good data to back it up. And it does, you know, it does enter my mindset too and make me weary even to that extent. Of, you know, you don't take these tight ends, or there's so many bust cases, there's so many, it's too much of a risk. And I'm fine with that, and I agree with that. I'm not going to lean that direction. For me right now, Nick, if the Giants stay at 6 and don't take a quarterback and don't trade back, I'm very in the camp of, please let it be Malik Nabers. He's just that Dan Schneider type. You said it when you started watching. He's a my kind of receiver. And I know Adunze has like, is it Adunze or Adunze? Adunze, right?
I think so.
All right. Well, Dunze has like skill set too. That's interesting. But, the Giants need a size receiver. And we'll get to, there's a question about that in a future mailbag. But my kind of receiver, Malik Nabers, this dude is just right up my alley as far as receivers go. And I just think he legitimately could have been a clear cut wide receiver one in a class that doesn't have Marvin Harrison Jr. So that excites me personally. And I don't think I would probably want to go Brock Bowers over a player like that. But we'll see what happens. To answer the second question, I have a strong take on this, an opinionated shocker. Dan Schneider is opinionated about something, but that's how it goes for me. I have passionate opinions about things. And I am team flats over drums. I think flats are light years better when it comes to
I'm team drums, baby.
Yeah. How?
I don't know.
The meat is nasty up there in a drumstick.
You think the meat is that? Nah, bro. I think you suck on a drum, dude. You get all those tendons and ligaments. You feel like a freaking caveman starts coming back out. You're like,
You crush a flat down before you eat it. Bang into the thing. The meat comes all off the bone like it's like smoker meat and stuff. the best. Some team flats over Trump's, but we're going to end it there. That's part two of the mailbag. We're going to do some more parts of this as the week rolls on, but we want to break it up into smaller chunks since there were so many questions. Thank you so much to those of you tuned in. Have a great rest of your night or week or whenever you listen to this, and we'll talk to you soon.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.